The Iran crisis is consuming the foreign policy bandwidth in Washington, but domestic politics are generating their own significant turbulence. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, is facing what multiple sources are describing as a genuine leadership revolt. Democratic nominees in competitive Senate races are openly declining to express support for his continued leadership, which, in political terms, is the equivalent of leaving a colleague to drown. You don't publicly distance yourself from your party's leader unless you think the association costs you more than it gains you. The reasons are multiple. Schumer's handling of the budget negotiations earlier this year left many Democratic members feeling he capitulated too early and extracted too little. His age and his New York sensibility play poorly with the rural and suburban voters Democrats need to win back in states like Montana, Wisconsin, and Ohio. And there's a generational frustration. A sense among younger Democrats that the leadership cohort that rose in the 80s and 90s is not equipped to fight the battles of the current moment.
The Nebraska situation adds a genuinely unusual legal dimension to this. Attorney General Hilgers has joined a lawsuit seeking to compel the Nebraska Democratic Party to name a replacement for Cindy Burbank, who withdrew as their Senate nominee. The legal theory here is interesting. It argues that ballot access laws create an enforceable obligation on a party to field a candidate. Most election law scholars would say that's a thin argument, but it's being made by the state's chief law enforcement officer, which gives it procedural weight that a private lawsuit wouldn't have. The underlying dynamic is that Nebraska has a second congressional district that allocates an electoral college vote independently, and Senate races in states like Nebraska have outsized symbolic value even when they're not competitive. A party that can't field a Senate candidate looks organizationally dysfunctional in ways that depress turnout in other races.
The White House ballroom story is in its own category of controversy. The $400 million renovation project, which would transform the East Room and adjacent spaces into what critics have called a personal entertainment venue, has an August 21st court deadline looming over it. Attorney General Todd Blanche's argument that existing law already authorized the project is legally aggressive. The relevant statute gives the president broad discretion over White House maintenance and renovation, but $200 million beyond the project's original scope is a stretch of maintenance that most appropriations lawyers would contest. The press freedom dimension of this week's White House news is separately troubling. After a contentious exchange between Trump and CNN, the White House communications shop responded by publishing personal information about a CNN reporter's children, invoking them by name in an official communication. That's not a normal escalation tactic. That's a line that previous administrations of both parties treated as inviolable.
The Jill Stein arrest warrant is a smaller story, but symbolically interesting. The St. Louis judge issued the warrant after Stein skipped a Monday hearing on misdemeanor charges stemming from a pro-Palestine protest at Washington University during the 2024 campaign. Stein has framed this as political persecution. The more mundane explanation is that she simply didn't appear for a scheduled court proceeding, which triggers an automatic warrant in most jurisdictions. But for the Green Party, which is always trying to generate visibility, even a misdemeanor warrant creates a platform.
And then there's the transgender CIA officer story, which cuts across national security, identity politics, and the current administration's personnel decisions simultaneously. The officer, who has now gone public, briefed Vice President Pence daily on intelligence matters before her gender transition became publicly known, at which point her career effectively ended. The account raises real questions about how much operational effectiveness the intelligence community has sacrificed in the name of ideological conformity, and whether the people making personnel decisions are actually thinking about mission effectiveness or about something else entirely.
The ex-ABC correspondents claim that Anthony Fauci personally influenced COVID lab leak coverage at the network is going to have a long afterlife. The claim is specific enough to be investigable if there were communications between Fauci's office and ABC News producers, those may be discoverable through FOIA or congressional investigation. The broader media credibility damage from the lab leak debate is already real. Whether this particular allegation proves out, it feeds a narrative that has been gaining traction for 2 years about institutional coordination between scientific authorities and major media organizations.